It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
What is up, NFL fans? Welcome back to another episode of the NFL Whip Around. I am your host, Jeff Hartman, joined by Coach KT Smith, and we have a lot to talk about. But before we do that, I want to remind you, if you're watching on YouTube, please like and subscribe to the channel so you get all the latest sports news, especially on the National Football League. And if you're listening on Apple or Spotify, give us a five-star rating. It does help, and we do appreciate it. Coach, with that being said, how are you?
Great. I'm great, man. I can't wait to talk about the draft. You know, I was making an analogy earlier. Doesn't it feel like, I don't know if you do any cooking, Jeff, but
I do.
Doesn't it feel like the draft in a way? It's like preparing like a great meal because you spend so much time in preparation, you know, buying preparing the recipe, doing the shopping, cooking it all up. And then like when you put it on the table, it's gone in like 5 minutes, man. You just devour that thing and it's gone, you know? And I felt like we were building up for the draft for months and months and months. And then all of a sudden, boom, it was over.
I love that analogy. I also compare it to the holidays because I am a Christmas geek. I mean, I start listening to Christmas music like in October and I took the anticipation of it. And then when it comes and then, like you said, just gone. It's gone. And you're like, well, what the hell? The buildup was for months and now it's just gone. Same way with the draft people. And I'm not even that into the draft. I'm not these people that do projections starting at college football season week one and all the way through. So I can only imagine what they feel, but the draft is a spectacle. Before we even get started with our topics, my gosh, did you see how many people were in attendance in Detroit?
Over 700,000 in the 3 days. That is mind-boggling.
Now, you went in Philly. I saw these numbers. In Philly, the number was 250,000. That was, the total number of people that attended in Philadelphia when it was there. No one has even come close. 700,000 people. I just can't even wrap my head around that.
No, and in Philly, it felt like the biggest concert you've ever been at. And yes, again, where do you put 700,000 people? You know, I know they weren't there all at once, but still, that is what a great boom. And the NFL, they do this right. What a great boom for the local businesses, for the local economy, restaurants, retail, all that. Just, you know, that's a tremendous, especially for a place like Detroit, which has had its issues for sure.
Yeah, and people have said, you know, why would a city want the draft? It's a reason why the city of Pittsburgh is trying to get the draft in 2027 or 2028, because like you said, it's not just a boom for the NFL and for that organization. It's for the whole town. And so the city of Detroit and the surrounding area, yeah, they're doing a little bit better today than they were last week for sure. But let's get to our topics. You know, giving out draft grades 2 days after the draft, well, it's silly season if you ask me. And we're not going to do that. Let's give us one team whose draft you really liked and why. Go ahead, Coach. I'll let you go first.
All right. I'll let you talk about the Steelers. So.
Yes, very good. Thank you.
I don't know who you're going to talk about.
I was prepared either way. So
there's a terrible towel right behind your head. So
that is true.
I will not talk about the Steelers. Let's talk about their cross-state rival, the Philadelphia Eagles. Okay. The Eagles go into that draft coming off of a really poor finish to the 2023 season. They're 10-1 at one point, and then they kind of limp home and lose in Tampa Bay in the playoffs. And they need to kind of remake themselves in a hurry on defense, especially in the secondary, because they're bad in the secondary. And all the debate between Philadelphia talk shows and local fans and things was, well, which corner do you like best? Do you like Quinyon Mitchell or do you like Cooper DeJean? Because people liked Cooper DeJean because of his scheme fit, and they liked Quinyon Mitchell because of his freakish athleticism. And somehow the Eagles get both of them. That is mind, but you know, like they made a trade up to get Cooper DeJean, but it wasn't like they leapt up considerably. They really didn't move that far and didn't have to trade away that much. So for them to revamp their corners that effectively with two of the best guys in the draft was tremendous. And then I really like the selection of Will Shipley a little bit later on, the running back from Clemson, because I think he's a perfect complement for Saquon Barkley. He's got a little bit of an Austin Eckler vibe, about the same size, but he can really catch the ball out of the backfield. And he can be that guy that if you want to use him on third downs, he'll take a lot off of Saquon Barkley's plate. So I really thought the Eagles did some good things.
So I was prepared to not, we'll talk about Pittsburgh in a second, because I know we both want to talk about Pittsburgh. But if I was choosing another team, I'd actually have to go with the Kansas City Chiefs. I think they had a really good draft for drafting 32nd. They found a lot of really good talent, I felt. And my gosh, what is Buffalo doing? Buffalo trades with Kansas City in round one. I don't care what you get in return. The team that has been your kryptonite for how many years, you're letting them move into your spot and take Xavier Worthy out of Texas, who seems like he's Tyreek Hill 2.0 in terms of speed and explosiveness. You're going to give them that guy? I'm sorry. I feel like that. We've said this before on this show. It's almost like organizational malpractice. I just can't understand how you would do that. They get a tackle, a big tackle from BYU. They add a tight end, Jaden Hicks, the safety out of Washington State. They added some good pieces, and they were very, very active on draft day, just like the Eagles were. Hell, I felt like every 5 seconds, the Eagles were making another trade. I think they have 25 picks next year after all the trades that they've made. But I thought the Chiefs draft was really, really good. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. That tight end, I really like a lot. A lot of people thought he was maybe the second best tight end in the draft behind Brock Bowers. Travis Kelce just signed a 2-year extension. Yeah. I would pretty much guarantee those are going to be the final 2 years of his career. So now you bring in a guy that maybe can be your successor to Kelce. Pairing up Worthy with Marquise Brown, who they just acquired, is it's too much. It's too much speed. And, you know, given all the other weapons they have on offense and how well Andy Reid schemes things up, to just be able to take the top off of coverage now, the way that they couldn't do last year, and they still won the damn Super Bowl.
Yeah,
that is frustrating as a fan of another AFC team to look at how effectively they're able to reshape their offense.
I say this trying to be as just down the middle as possible here with this NFL show. The Pittsburgh Steelers hit a home run with their draft. I don't know anyone that follows football, that anyone knows the team needs, anyone knows how these players are ranked. They can't look at what the Steelers got in terms of at least their first four selections and say, oh, wow, like that was a really good draft. I thought the Steelers had a phenomenal draft. It's the second draft for Omar Khan as the GM, his second tremendous draft. Coach, what was your take on the 2024 Steelers draft class?
Yeah, so, I mean, if people want empirical evidence to you know, suggest that we're not being homers about this, so I think you saw this. Somebody did a graphic where they compiled 20 draft grade things and they put them all together with an aggregate, and the Steelers had the highest aggregate total of any team in the league. Obviously what they're doing up front is an identity thing. You know, they're doubling down on their identity, who they want to be, particularly on offense, and they want to be a smash mouth football team that runs the ball well on first and second down and gives their quarterback you know, third downs that are manageable and takes some pressure off of the quarterback position and controls clock, all those things. And they went out and they got dudes who can do it. Obviously, I mean, people are in love with the tackle pick, Troy Faltanu, the first round pick. Zach Frazier, local boy, has made a lot of people happy, and they think he'll be a plug and play center. The fourth round pick, Mason McCormick, I'm really high on. That, I mean, you want to be a physical football team, and that he can be the poster child for that. He is a brawler. So in 2 years, Pittsburgh has completely overhauled their entire offensive line. and remade their identity. And obviously hats off to their office for doing that.
What do you think about the third round picks, Roman Wilson and Peyton Wilson?
Well, I mean, Peyton Wilson, if people were okay with his injury history, it'd be a first round draft pick. Yeah. I mean, he's got a motor and an ability to get to the football that's just innate. Roman Wilson's a great compliment for what the offense that you can expect in Pittsburgh. 72% of the passes that he caught at Michigan were between the hashes, which means he really operates well in the middle of the field. And if you're a play action football team, you're going to throw the ball in the middle of the field. And so they go out and they get a guy again, who they feel will fit well in their system. I know there's some Steelers fans that liked the idea of a bigger outside receiver, but for what they're going to do, he filled a huge need.
I thought it was an A+ for the Steelers. I mean, people want to complain about 6-round draft picks. Like, you're complaining about 6-round draft picks. Like, the rest of the picks were really flipping good.
But 30% of 6th and 7th round draft picks over the last 10 years have made their team's opening day rosters.
30
of 6th and 7th round picks. So, you know, if you want to haggle with that 30%, go for it.
Well said. Now, throughout the NFL draft, there's always head scratching moves, picks that are made that make you just go, what? Now, I brought up one about Buffalo trading with the Chiefs, but there was one that everyone's talking about, and that would be the Falcons taking Michael Penix Jr., number 8 overall. This after they gave $100 million guaranteed to Kirk Cousins. Shout out to our boy Pez, though, because Pez was on our live stream for day 1, and we watched probably the first 4 or 5 picks before you all left the stream. And he said, I could see Penix going to the Falcons. And there he was. I was like, that guy got it again. So shout out to Pez. What was your take on Atlanta taking Michael Penix Jr. 8th overall?
I still really haven't quite sorted out in my mind how they rationalized it all. I guess I see it like this. You're going to get 2 years out of Kirk Cousins. You've given him $100 million guaranteed, and it's pretty much all going to come in the first 2 years. And so you figure, hey, we've got Kirk Cousins, pretty good quarterback, for 2 years, and then we have a succession plan in place in-house. And if we're good, you know, if you're the Falcons and you think you're going to be pretty good, and they could be pretty good, you're not going to get a shot to draft in the top 10 again. And so what you're doing is you're saying, we think we're going to be pretty good for the next couple of years, and we're not going to be in position to draft the successor. So let's do it right now, even if that means Michael Penix sits on the bench for 2 years. That's got to be the logic, because otherwise it makes no sense. And the fact that I guess the thing that bothers me about it, I'm not bothered about your evaluation. If you think Michael Penix is the guy and you want to go get him, go get him. You know, I'm a big believer in, if you love the guy, go get the guy. I don't have a problem necessarily in that. It doesn't make any sense after you just gave Kirk Cousins $100 million. I got a bigger problem with not telling Kirk Cousins. That Kirk Cousins finds out about it when you're on the clock about to make the pick. I got a huge problem with that, because that is bad for the clubhouse. And when you're trying to rebuild a team, culture's huge, and that's going to take some repairing.
Yeah, this isn't 2022 Steelers where they sign Mitch Trubisky as a free agent and then they draft Kenny Pickett. Mitch Trubisky is not getting $100 million like Kirk Cousins is. And I don't know. This is one of those situations where I did hear some people, this was on social media, say that the Falcons are saying and trying to justify this by saying, we're trying to go the Green Bay Packer plan. And that means, like, when Brett Favre was still the quarterback, Aaron Rodgers sat, learned, and then took over. When Aaron Rodgers was there, Jordan Love was drafted, sat, and then it took over. Boy, you're investing a lot of money, like you said, into Kirk Cousins, though, whereas those two previous examples, Favre and Rodgers, were at the end of their career, and they weren't probably making $100 million guaranteed. It just doesn't add up. It doesn't add up at all. And I've seen some fan reactions from Falcon fans on social media. They have every right to be absolutely livid and wonder what the hell is going on. And this is Raheem Morris, who's trying to get a new lease on his career. This is probably his last shot at a head coaching gig. And this is what you do? I don't know. Not a good look.
I would love to know, maybe Scott Kennedy knows. I would love to know if this is Raheem Morris's pick or if this is forced on him by ownership, because he's a defensive-minded coach.
Yeah.
And the Falcons need help on defense. Corner and edge rusher were their two biggest needs, and everybody who was doing mock drafts was projecting Dallas Turner, the edge rusher from Bama, or one of those edge guys, to them. And so I would love to know, right? Is this the new head coach who, like you just said, needs to be successful? Is he on board with picking a guy who's not going to help your team on the field in 2024, most likely?
This is one of those moves. Like, I could talk myself into saying, like, oh, well, you know what? The Bills trading with the Chiefs, it wasn't that big of a trade. Whatever, not a big deal. I can't justify this in my head at all. At all. I cannot do it. And it's not just because of the money given to Kirk Cousins. It's also the fact that a lot of people weren't sold on Michael Penix as a capable quarterback. Coach, what was your take on Penix, though? You were big on his stock improving heading into the draft. Do you still stand by that? And like, that's an eighth overall pick, though. Like, that's
Here's why I was big on his stock improving, because when you watch him play, you can tell he's a smart quarterback. His reads are great, you know, and he understands coverage. He knows where to go with the football. And I would be willing to bet that as teams got to sit down with him and talk about him and put him up on the board, you know, one of the things that they love when you go to the pro days is, you know, you get him in the classroom and you get to throw up all these different defenses and you say, hey, draw up your favorite pass concept again. Now draw it up against this defense. Now draw it up against that defense. I'd be willing to bet that he excelled, and that when teams got him in that environment, they liked him more and more and more. So that's why I thought his draft stock would rise. But you still have the same questions about him that you had on the field. The tape doesn't change. And so the reason people didn't love him earlier on predominantly was the fact that he's got a long release. He gets the ball out fairly slowly, and that can be deadly in the NFL. So they're going to have to speed him up one way or another.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting where, it's a head scratcher. Like I said, it's a freaking head scratcher. But we'll see. Maybe 5 years down the road, we'll say Penix turned out to be amazing, and it turned out to be a good pick. We'll see. Let's go to our next topic. What's your takeaway from the fact that the first defensive player off the board in the draft didn't happen until the 15th pick? That was the longest wait in NFL draft history, by the way. Is this an anomaly that won't play out in future drafts, or just sign that the NFL is all about offense?
I think that particular spot 15 is an anomaly. I don't think we're going to see that because there's just always a need for edge rushers and corners. And there'll always be some standout guy that'll go up higher. But I do think that this is the new normal, that the emphasis on offense now will be so significant that you're going to see the top of the first round be really tilted towards the offense. I mean, we've talked about this before. Really hard to win a Super Bowl without an elite quarterback. And the teams drafting at the top of the draft usually need one of those guys. So if it's a fairly deep quarterback class, you're going to see a run on those guys. This draft, though, a bit of an anomaly because it was especially deep on quarterbacks and receivers. And so you saw all those guys go up at the top of the first round, and it was a little bit thinner on edge rushers and interior defensive linemen, who are also guys that tend to go fairly high. So I don't think we're going to see 15 again, but I do think that it's going to be common for us to see, you know, 11, 12 of the first 15 picks be on offense.
Yeah, I also look at this, and what does this all come down to, in my opinion? It comes down to quarterbacks. That's what it comes down to. So there were six quarterbacks selected in the top 12. Like, there's six. Half of those top 12 picks were one position, not just offense, one position. Therefore, that pushes defensive needs down the road a little bit. And I don't think there were as many prolific defenders. Correct me if I'm wrong, because you know these prospects better than I do. There was no Myles Garrett in this draft. Hell, there was no Jadeveon Clowney in this draft. Am I right?
Correct. I mean, Leatu Latu, the first pick off the board, really talented guy. First defensive pick off the board, really talented guy. But big concerns about his injury history. Really serious neck injury that, if it repeats itself in the pros, could be career threatening. So he was a really talented guy, but comes with an asterisk almost. Oftentimes, you get the dominant guy, you get the the defensive tackles, especially in a draft where you're absent an edge or a skill on defense, there's almost always a dominant three tech. And one thing that we have seen in recent years is the value of those dominant three techs rise. You've seen those guys really start to get paid. Look at some of the contracts that went out recently to some of those interior defenders. You know, they're getting $100 million contracts now. We didn't have that either. We know that the linebacker position has been devalued. So, yeah, this has just been one. This was one of those drafts, right, where the marquee defensive players were absent.
And again, it's always going to come down to quarterbacks. It's always going to come down to how many quarterbacks. I go back. I hate to do it, but I always go back to 2022. And everyone says if the Steelers didn't take Kenny Pickett at pick 20, no quarterbacks would have gone in the first round of that draft. Think about that.
Yeah.
This class was the complete opposite. This class was, holy cow, like it's one of those situations where they valued this quarterback class way greater than a lot of other groups. So interesting stuff, interesting input there. Let's go to the fourth topic.
One more comment about that real quick. So next year's quarterback class is said to be pretty thin. You only have, I think it's Shedeur Sanders.
Shedeur Sanders.
I can't remember the other one. Who's the Georgia kid, Carson Beck. Those two guys are talked about as hey, they're going in the first round, but nobody else is a name that is being mentioned as a surefire first rounder. So maybe if we go back to Atlanta real quick, that's a reason why they jump at Penix. You look ahead a year and you say, we're not going to get a guy next year. And maybe that's why Denver jumps at Bo Nix for the same reasons.
What do you think about Bo Nix? Because I can't stand, honestly, I had no opinion on Sean Payton, but since he's gone to Denver, that guy just he rubs me the wrong way. When he sat at that podium, basically like, oh yeah, we got the Minnesota Vikings to trade up, like an interconference, but it's not even a rivalry. Like, what are you gloating about? And they get Bo Nix. Like, what's your take on Bo Nix? I feel like he's 35 years old already coming out of college, but still, what's your take on him?
I think the Broncos were going pretty hard on some revisionist history, man. You know, like they raved about him. Anytime it's like, you know, when a husband or a wife gushes about their spouse on Facebook, you're almost always like, oh, there's some marital problems going on there. There's some overcompensating going on there. Like, I mean, they were going so overboard about his football IQ and how incredible their meetings with him were. And he knew how to do everything that we asked him to do, et cetera. I think he's a good player. He's not the 12th pick in the draft, man. He's not the 12th best player in the draft. He's not even close. You know, I mean, he gives me some Kenny Pickett vibes. I think there's a lot of things that he does that are very similar to what Kenny Pickett does. Maybe he diagnoses the field better. Maybe he can read coverage better. I don't know. But you know, that felt like a little bit of a desperation move. They knew that he was the last guy in the draft who could, you know, be just even justified as a pick you could take there. And we saw that because it was like 120 picks later when Spencer Rattler finally went off the board. So that was, you know, they're like grabbing at the last straw there.
Yeah. Spencer Rattler, fifth round pick. Like, that's incredible. Yeah. So, okay, let's go to our next topic. Players from 85 different colleges were drafted during the 2024 draft. Michigan had 13. Then Texas, Alabama, Florida State, Washington, and Georgia. So the most was Michigan with 13. Not coincidentally, those six teams finished last season as the six highest ranked teams in the nation. Do you think there's a clear lesson here for the NFL? Should they just narrow their focus and draft players from the best college programs? What's your take on maybe some of those dark horse players that don't go to big name schools?
Right. You're always going to be able to find, you know, the diamond in the rough, the small school guy. I saw somebody was drafted out of British Columbia University. And there's always going to be something like that. Houston Christian. I didn't know that was a school. Somebody was drafted from Houston Christian.
Is that an HBCU?
I have no idea. I've never even heard of it before. But we are seeing a separation in college football like never before of the haves and the have-nots. And you're seeing it with conference realignments. Yeah, and you're seeing it with talk of inevitably like the creation just of these sort of super conferences where the back half of Division I kind of gets squeezed out. You know, with NIL money anymore, the absolute best are going to gravitate towards the schools that can pay them the most. And that tends to be the powerhouses. So I think all those schools you mentioned, the Georgias and the Bamas and the Texas and Ohio States and Michigans, et cetera, they're going to get better and better and better. And the collection of talent that they're going to assemble is going to be greater and greater. And so I suspect that we will begin to see, you know, we're probably still going to have, you know, 80 players be taken from 80 some different schools, but the top end talent rounds 1, 2, 3, I think you're going to see a more and more of a concentration from those power five elites.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a reason why, again, we're Steeler fans. So we know this. Mike Tomlin, like, he does not miss certain pro days. He doesn't miss Michigan. He doesn't miss Alabama. I think he might've missed Ohio State this year, but I think Ohio State, don't they have some crazy number of players returning? Like, wasn't there?
Yeah. They only had 4 guys drafted, which for them is like nothing, you know, and they've got, I think they're coming back as the preseason number 1 or number 2.
Yeah. So, but there's certain programs that he does not miss their pro days because that's probably someone that he's going to be interested in drafting. And it makes sense. I mean, I still laugh at this to myself when backups at Alabama got drafted before players that actually played the position for other schools. J.D. Hassenauer was an example. The dude was a backup center and found his way on an NFL roster as a backup center, but still he didn't play at Alabama. He just was on the team when Najee Harris was there and everything, just crazy. I think that, you know, there's got to be a fit. The NFL would be doing that. These different scouting departments, they wouldn't be doing their jobs if they didn't focus on the best players in college football. And then I think when you also look at the HBCUs, and we all know about how the Pittsburgh Steelers were one of the first teams in NFL history to really start to dive into those players. And that's when they started to Bill Nunn, the Hall of Fame scout, he was the one that really started to have these players that were selected from these schools. Those seem to be lesser and lesser. Do you agree? I mean, I remember Javon Hargrave being drafted from South Carolina State, which is still an HBCU. But when you talk about where Mean Joe Green played and Donnie Shell, again, we're Steeler fans, so that's where I'm going to reference. They all went to HBCUs, and I just don't see that as – it doesn't happen as much, don't you think?
Yeah, you know, and you can remember names like, you know, like John Mobley from the Niners.
Yep.
Played at Division II Kutztown or at Westchester. Andre Reed played at Division II Kutztown. In PA. I mean, you still get it. You know, there were a couple of players, one guy from Holy Cross, you know, the school in Massachusetts where Gordy Lockbaum went, if you remember that name. But and then they got a free agent wide receiver who got signed, et cetera. You still get them. I had a coach in our school today doing some recruiting from Villanova, and Villanova will occasionally churn out an NFL guy. But I feel as though there's just this notion that the backup center on Alabama is going to be better than anybody on Villanova's roster. If you're imagine if you're the backup quarterback at Alabama, you could start at 100 other Division I schools, most likely.
Probably.
So, you know, we saw, remember the one year they had Tua and Jalen Hurts.
I mean, Jalen Hurts,
like, it's incredible.
Hurts got replaced before the national championship game by Tua.
Right.
You're like, well, Jalen Hurts finishes his college career at Oklahoma as he transferred. Tua becomes a top pick for the Miami Dolphins. Pretty crazy. All right, let's do our fifth and final topic here. In non-draft news, the NFL announced over the weekend it'll allow players to wear guardian caps. Those are the caps that the players had been wearing during training camp and practices at times to protect against head injuries in games next season. What's your take? Just to reference, it is not mandatory. The players have the option of doing that if they want. Coach, what's your take on this as a coach? I'm curious.
Well, it's really smart from a safety and marketing standpoint. They make a significant difference. We use them. We have used them in the past in our practices. It'd be hard to describe this without a visual, but they look like a bigger outer shell, like a foam shell that goes over your helmet. And it really lessens the impact. And there's been scientific studies that prove that our players, when they've worn them, say that they feel a lot more confident in terms of the contact. So from that standpoint, really good move. However, they are awkward. Some of our kids did not like wearing them because, you know, kind of create helmets are heavy. And it kind of creates a little bit of an imbalance. They're big and they're bulky and they're going to look goofy and ridiculous. You're not going to be able to see the team's logo from an aesthetic standpoint. There's going to be pushback against them. So it'll be very interesting to see how this goes. I'm very curious. I wonder how many players will opt for them. Will there be some like machismo stuff, you know, in the locker room? Like, you know, don't be soft. Don't be wear that stupid thing. Years ago, when you had Steve Tasker playing for the Bills, and he got the big, shell.
The second shell, yeah.
Yeah, only one other player in the entire NFL, a lineman for the 49ers, also opted for that because all the other guys thought they were goofy.
Yeah. I got to say, first, the NFL knows how to play their cards well. So they say, hey, you are allowed to use these. We're not going to force you. You're allowed to. So if the concussion rates are going in the wrong direction, the NFL can always get leaned back and say, hey, these guys could be wearing these. Scientific proof has shown us that the last 2 years when we've made them mandatory. Now, again, the pushback would be, well, why don't you make them mandatory? They might say they're full-grown adults. They can make their own decisions. So with that out of the way, I will say, the aesthetics matter. These young kids today, and I was this way, I guess, when I was a young kid as well. I don't know if you were. I can't speak for you, Coach. They care so much about what they look like. When I coached, I didn't coach football. I coached lacrosse. When I coached lacrosse, these guys, the helmet had to be just right. Like, they had to have the angle. They called it the tilt. The tilt had to be just right. They had to have the flow coming out of the helmet with the hair. They had to, you know, man, it's one of those things where unbelievable how much they care what they look like. They've got the tights on that only go to the mid calf. Like, it's incredible how much they care about the aesthetics. And that's why I don't think anyone's going to use them. I don't think it'll take maybe one or two people, but I don't think anyone will use them this year because even the NFL, they care about what they look like, whether it's the players. We talked about this on our live stream just the other day, how these defenders are wearing like no knee pads and offensive line that are coming into the draft. They care about what they look. They want that look. Tyreek Hill has paid the NFL over $100,000 because he refuses to wear socks. Why? He likes the way he looks with socks on. Like, it's incredible. It's absolutely incredible. He's paid that much amount of money in fines over that. That's why I don't think anyone's going to wear it. Coach, did you care about what you look like?
We see it constantly. I mean, I've had kids get sent off the field during the kickoff in a game. All right, we come out on the field for the opening kick. Before they even kick off, the referee throws the kid off the field because his pants don't cover his knees. Because they like what it look the image of what it looks like with the pants pulled up over the kneecaps, because that's what all the college and NFL guys are doing.
Yeah.
So yeah, I agree. If they're being smart, maybe some of the strong safeties, some of the linebackers, some of the guys that have the most impact, will wear them. But I don't think too many.
When you were roaming the fields of Gettysburg as a safety, did you care about what you look like?
I guess a little bit, but like we didn't have, you know, like people taking 8 million pictures of us on their phones and putting it up on 12 different social media sites. So I didn't really see what I looked like that much. You know, every once in a while, there'd be a photo and I'd be like, oh, that looks cool. But like, you know, it just wasn't emphasized as much.
I remember when I was in middle school and I played football, that was when Deion Sanders brought out the helmet that it looked like a quarterback that had those sidebars, you know, the Deion Sanders face mask like that. Yeah. Everyone wanted that face mask. Like, oh my gosh, I got to get that face mask. Like, that's the face mask I want. So I think it's always been that way. But, and unfortunately, I do think that a lot of people, and I don't know if maybe it's the machismo factor of I'm a tough guy and I don't want to be ridiculed if I decide to wear one. It'll be an interesting case study this year to see if anyone does wear one of those Guardian caps. All right, let's do our player profile. Mr. Irrelevant this year was none other than New York Jets draft pick Jalen Key, defensive back out of Alabama. You want to talk about this guy? Go ahead, Coach.
Yeah, he's a pretty good football player. I really wanted to talk about the topic of Mr. Irrelevant. I think we talk about football marketing. This is kind of cool. This was not really started by the NFL. This was started by a guy named Paul Salata, a wide receiver back in 1976, who didn't like that the negative connotation that was associated with being the last pick in the draft. Because basically what he was saying was, it's an unbelievable honor to be selected in the NFL draft, no matter where you are, because less than 1% of the people that play football. So we should celebrate this. And he created this award, and it goes with it, comes with it, this pretty crazy week, irrelevant week. If you are Mr. Irrelevant, the last man taken in the draft, you fly out to California for Irrelevant Week, where you go to Disneyland, you go to an Angels or a Dodgers game. You are the master of ceremonies in a golf tournament. You participate in a regatta. There's a nice regatta. You're in a regatta. And then they have a roast of you on like kind of the banquet night where all the other Mr. Irrelevants are invited to come. And then everybody roasts the current Mr. Irrelevant. They pay for your whole family to come out there. I mean, it's pretty cool, you know, and there have been some decent Mr. Irrelevants. Everybody knows Brock Purdy.
Yeah.
If you go back, the Steelers in 1980 drafted a guy named Tyrone McGriff, who was a starting guard for them for a couple years. Somebody Steelers fans do not like Ryan Succop. He was Mr. Irrelevant who missed a kick on the last play of the season a few years back that kept him out of the playoffs.
Yep.
So I think that this is a, you know, I like these quirky little kind of, you know, outside the margins types things. And I think this is a cool one.
When you also think about if you get drafted and you make a roster, you've got a 4-year contract. You know, like there's some insurance there compared to if you're not and you're an undrafted free agent, you know, you got to make a roster. And then you talk about how they kind of contractually own you for a while, whether it's restricted free agency, unrestricted or exclusive rights free agency. And you're getting paid a lot less as an undrafted player compared to those that did get drafted. So even though you might have been the last draft pick, it matters. It matters to your bottom line as much as it does being Mr. Irrelevant. So I always say people like, seventh round picks are nothing more than trying to get a head start on the undrafted free agents. You want to make sure you get your guys. It doesn't matter if you get drafted. That's a big deal. It's a big deal. So you're going to get some, you're at least going to get paid some money for sure. Some decent money at that. So, all right, coach, any final thoughts on the draft? We'll be talking about it next week for sure, but any final thoughts?
Now it's time to really do the work. You know, I always, the draft is cool, but this is why I think draft grades are silly, because the work begins now. If I go back to the meal analogy, all right, all this was is buying the groceries. Yeah. Now I got to cook the thing up. So this is really where the coaching staffs and the organizations will make their money. Now they've got to turn these guys into effective NFL players. And that's the really exciting part for me.
Find someone out there, coach does it for the Steel Curtain Network, that will give you honest analysis of a player. Anyone can drool over highlights. Like you could make some guy from, I don't know, BFE University who makes 7 plays in a season. Take those 7 plays, put them all in a highlight reel and put it on Twitter. And make, this guy's great. Find people that will actually give you a legitimate reason. Hey, this is probably why he went in the 4th round, 5th round, etc. And it'll help you temper your expectations for the upcoming season. But coach, what do you have coming up on the call sheet? Anything cool?
Yeah. So we're going to pick, we're not going to go through the whole draft, but I picked 5 AFC teams and 5 NFC teams I think had the most interesting drafts. And we're going to focus on them as to why, not the best or the worst, but just things I thought were really interesting in terms of what they did and what it kind of says about their, you know, where they are as an organization right now.
Very cool. Very cool. You can check him out at KT Smith FFSN. And it's Coach's Call Sheet on Instagram and Twitter, right? That's your hub.
Yeah, the Coach's Call Sheet, right? So everything that I'm doing, whether it's YouTube stuff, video breakdowns, podcasts, articles, that's all going to go on the Coach's Call Sheet.
There you go. Make sure you check that out. Again, Twitter and Instagram, Coach's Call Sheet. You can find me on Twitter at @jhartman, @HARTMAN_PIT. Find my work at the Steel Curtain Network. Search Steelers anywhere we get your podcast, and you'll find both myself and Coach on that platform. Coach, again, been a great show. Thanks again. We'll talk next week. Take it easy.